Well, considering what's happened with this team at the end, damn you.
What was the damn you?
Don't turn the page. Our lives are at stake. Don't turn.
Yeah.
Son of a.
It's because it's the end. They didn't die.
Still.
Why is that sad? That's every comic ever.
Well, but that's a comic that's like aware and being like, please don't end my story. Please. Please. Please, oh good comics reader. And I'm just like,
Yeah.
ah, you made me complicit.
Oh man,
You know
there's
what? Let's start with this. Let's start
with
with this
Dr.
one.
13, and which one am I
That
going
what
with?
we were just talking about, I hope David will include my shocked and disgusted reaction to what he made me read
The last page. Well,
before we
yeah.
explain what it was. Dr. 13 by Brian Azzarello. It's a wacky.
It's not what you expected
It
from
really is not.
him.
Cliff Chang. Now that does look like Cliff Chang,
Very much so.
who
It's one of my
looks
favorite things he's done.
a little like Amanda Conner, but more painterly or restrained. I'm
I
not
feel like
sure
it's
exactly.
like if Amanda Conner's a cartoon,
Yeah.
Cliff Chang would be the movie version where it's a little bit more realistic.
That's a good way of putting it.
But it's the story
But it's
of.
not. I'm trying to think of. Like, I don't want to relegate him to like Amanda Conner, but not.
It's
Because. But
because they're both
their
very, very
art
skilled.
styles are alike enough that I think if I just looked at one or just a panel, they might be confused, but.
It's because they're both big on facial expressions, like actual fashion. Sensible shoes.
It's got the same, it looks like the same color scheme. The women have kind of the same heavy around the eyes, eyelashes, and that kind of thing.
I see.
It's.
Who colored this? I don't remember. I want to say Dave Stewart, but it's been. Oh, Patricia Mulvihill, who colored like hundreds of Vertigo books and all of 100 Bullets. She's pretty good.
They're both very, very good artists that just happen to resemble each other. Let's go with that.
Complimentary
Yes.
with an E instead of an I.
So, Dr. 13 is basically, well, he's Terry 13. He's
Yeah.
a paranormal debunker, basically. And he is the Dana Scully of this book, to make an outrageously outdated reference.
Actually,
He's.
an X-Files comic just came out this week. And they're fighting the 30 Days of Night vampires. So, if that's an outdated
Oh.
reference, that comic is instantly outdated by the time it hit the shelves.
Well, let's face it, it is.
Yeah.
But,
He's a skeptic to the point of lunacy, I think, is
yes.
part of what the book is about.
And he is being proved wrong every single step of the way.
Yeah.
Like, if he says something's not going to happen, it happens by the end of the book.
Yeah, pretty much.
I enjoy. Well, okay. Enjoy isn't exactly the way to put it, but they do that. I'm having a dream that's obviously a dream, and then I wake up, I'm like, I'm having the most weirdest dream. And then something goes really wrong, and they realize they're still in a dream, and then they wake up at the first part. But, well, the first one is just, the first sequence is obviously a dream. The second sequence is three panels, but feels like forever because he wakes up, his eyes open up, and just off panel, you hear the, or you see the, well, what is it called? Voice balloon.
Oh
Saying daddy, and then
yeah. Oh yeah.
you look at the next panel, and it's her in like this ridiculous negligee with like leaning forward, and one of the straps is falling down, and he's not looking at her yet, but he's just like, oh, I had the most amazing, I was having the most And then he looks at her, and it's just like her with the porn face. Amazing. And then the next panel is him waking up screaming. And her coming in just like normal teenager clothes.
Yeah. It's a very funny book.
They kind of enjoy kicking him all the way through. Okay, but the idea is these are a whole bunch of comic book characters that DC, that are stupid and ridiculous and redundant.
Unsellable, too.
Yes. And DC is going to basically write them off. And Dr. 13, the guy who does not believe in anything paranormal or anything weird, is going to be the one to discover that they're all comic book characters.
Yeah.
And DC is going to basically write them off. And that's kind of the journey. There's like this sad 80s vampire and
super Anne Rice and appearance, yeah, and
a weird pirate, super baby, Corey ripoff. It's just, yeah.
And they're all like actual characters too.
They are.
Probably the best part is that there are characters who have just been in limbo for. So I think Genius Jones is from the 40s or 50s. Let me double check. But it's very much a... Genius Jones is from August 1942, Adventure Comics 77.
And there's like this weird extreme pirate and
ghost
Nazi
pirate.
Gorilla.
It's kind of a fun trip through kind of like comics history.
Yeah.
There's that point where they could sell any comic as long as there was something funny on the cover. So, you know, Nazi gorillas, Hispanic ghost pirates, vampires named I Vampire, and Infectious Lass. I don't know who came up with her, but what an amazing idea for a character.
You like your germs, don't you?
Not necessarily a positive, amazing idea. Just like, wow, this, you probably should have thought this through a little bit better.
And, yeah, at the end, he realizes they are all, like, he realizes they're all in a comic book. And he realizes that the story is going to come to an end, but they're going to be trapped in, like, this idiot teen limbo forever. And he's like, and he actually turns to the reader and is like, don't turn the page. Whatever you do, this can't be the end. Oh no, oh please. And yeah, then it's the end. And so I'm wondering what thought process led you to do this to me. Like, I know.
I don't understand how that's
maybe
a sad ending.
Maybe you didn't understand from before when you were like, oh, here's a fun super team, the Fantastic Four, and I'll give you the book where they're all hideously tortured. And I'm like, why would you do that?
Wow, maybe that was exactly a year ago.
And now here's a fun super team of all these DC characters that you know I'll like, and you basically gave me a book where I was confronted with my own complicity in their ultimate, I guess, sentencing to comics obscurity.
That is,
you are not a
true.
Nice man, and I feel like these podcasts are your way of somehow
it's payback
hurting
for
me.
Stephanie Brown.
What did I do to you with Stephanie Brown?
Nothing, just in general. But so, other than the last page, this is brutally funny, a fair way to put it?
Yes, it was extremely funny.
Because kind of everyone gets kicked in the butt at some point during the comic, I guess, except for Tracy 13.
Yeah.
She's really the only capable, well, no, Genius Jones comes off pretty well, but Tracy's the only one who's basically not an idiot. And though she's also hiding her magic from her dad, and she's really awkwardly embarrassed about it. But there's one thing in here, can I see? We talked about this when we talked about gastrophobia. Oh, it's one of my favorite comedic things. What scene was it in? But
oh, the
Virginius Jones asks someone a question, and then someone else answers with a pun, and he does a flip take. I'm never gonna find it.
You have an interesting, I guess, set of likes.
Yeah, it's completely,
it's like I like your war comics, and I like your noir comics,
and I like really, really like puns.
And especially when people are like, what? In response to them. Like, I don't really know how to synthesize this.
I'm not sure how
you
it
have
even came about.
A pathological hatred of me for some reason. You're like, how can I suck her in and then just stab her in the chest at the last minute?
So basically what you're saying is I should remove the last page next time I let someone borrow this book.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, here we go. So Tracy 13, they're fighting superhero costumes from the 60s. It's mm-hmm. the old school Justice League. I'm like the Phantom Stranger. And Tracy goes, it's an army of costumes. What would you call that? And she hands Genius Jones a dime. And he answers the question and says, a wardrobe. And she just flips right off the panel. I honestly laughed out loud. Like, I have the dumbest sense of humor in the entire world.
And you see her feet. Okay, well, it's kind of explained where she gets wrapped around with
yeah,
the Flash costume.
Yeah, she's off screen.
But and just... then the next, her dad rescues her from the Flash costume. You saved me. Of course, no father wants to see his daughter a fashion victim.
Yeah. I also laughed at that. It's what's funny about Azzarello, and I realized this reading 100 Bullets, is that he really, really loves wordplay. So, like, scenes where... say if, like, I'm standing alone in a room talking, the last couple lines of my sentence will mm-hmm. be the first few of yours, and it provides, like, a thematic thing. But it's also a really great way to do jokes. And so he is, surprisingly, and not, like, knocking his skill, but he's, considering what he's best known for, he's really good at funny comics. And, like, a really kind of punny, wordplay-based funny. I mean, one of the characters is named I, Vampire, and... there are like 16 different I, Vampire jokes in the book, all based around someone going, you know, like, I, Captain, or, you know, you, Vampire. He's like, no, I, Vampire, that sort of thing. It, yeah, my taste, it's like there was a hurricane in the Taste Factory. And I got what was left. But, so what's, Tracy 13 didn't used to be... like the kind of normal girl magician. She was a Superman character in like 2001 or something like that. And she was much more extreme, I guess is the word. She was called Girl 13. And she was like a... what was her deal? She fell out of the sky and she helped out Superman sometimes and there was another Supergirl. It was interesting, but it wasn't very good, you know? Mm-hmm. But this is one of those revamps where it's like, yeah, this makes much more sense.
Well, in the Blue Beetle, she was adopted by him and his wife.
Oh, that's interesting.
So.
Yeah, I guess that explains the magic. But so.
And where the super skeptic is just like, gets a magic daughter.
Yeah. It's, I like how a book about how unmarketable these guys are uh-huh. turned out to be like a tremendous hit. Because this started out as a backup in, it was like Tales of the Spectre or mm-hmm. the Spectre. Here's a long title with like three colons in it, you know? Mm-hmm. And like the
violating your
so
colon
huge.
Rule.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I have one.
You get
all
one,
I
that's
need.
It. Like, what's
that's
you
all
two?
Anyone needs.
Oh, double entendres. I also like those. But. But the buzz was so great that they were like, wow, we have to put this into a trade. And it's like one of the few DC comics to hit trade like within 8 months of coming out. And it's for just this marginal little backup that they did on a whim.
Yeah, I get if you just keep piling craziness on there. Yeah.
It's like by
eventually
the time...
you'll pick up everyone. It's like the Dust Bunny approach.
by the time that Grant Morrison, Jeff Johns, Greg Rucka, and Mark Waid show up as the villains of the comic, like, you're just along for the ride. It's okay. And I think this is the sort of thing that DC can do, but Marvel can't. Because, like, Marvel's, you know, the Marvel Universe is very much like, you know, New York City, you know, mm-hmm. more or less the modern day.
But Marvel does...
They do goofy stories, but they couldn't do this kind of pointedly self-aware thing that DC did.
They do, though.
Deadpool doesn't count.
They did it in She-Hulk for a while.
Oh, that's true. When, was it the Rawhide Kid? Or the 1-2-3 Kid?
Well, there's one where she got pulled out of time and... got pulled to a different time, and they tried to destroy her for future or past or something crimes with the retcon, a canon that retconned her and things.
I must have missed that one.
That is such a shame, because you would have enjoyed that.
Man, I should reread She-Hulk at some point. But it's more that Marvel didn't really have the, like, put a gorilla on the cover, it'll sell 100,000 extra copies era that DC did.
That's true.
So, well, there's probably Nazi gorillas. You know,
show Abraham Lincoln murdering someone on the cover, which happened on the cover of Batman, don't worry.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it a robot Lincoln, or?
No, it was a guy who could make other people think that he looked like anyone. And so he once appeared to, like, a little kid caught him dumping a body, and... he appeared to the kid as Jesus.
Wow, that is extraordinarily messed up.
Yes, I know. It was a while ago. I was surprised they got away with it. But yeah, they had Abraham Lincoln murdering someone.
That's pretty cool. There's this layer of, like, the wackiness is okay that DC has that I feel Marvel doesn't. I mean, Vampire is pretty close to probably a couple of Marvel characters, like Star Fox or someone. Maybe even Quicksilver. They're all very stuffy. But he's not quite so much an Anne Rice.
I wouldn't say Star Fox is stuffy. Isn't he the alien love god?
Yeah, but he used to be very haughty.
Huh.
In, like, all these... I tried to read some 80s Avengers, and it didn't go well. In part because Avengers are boring. But, well, other than your favorite ending ever, what was the best... What was your favorite part of the book? Because it seems like you liked it.
I did. That's why it was so wrenching when the meta got involved.
Yeah.
I liked the vampire and the Yeti costume. I liked where Tracy apparently got a crush on the Neanderthal. And there are so many different... weirdnesses. I like the little details rather than the big stuff.
Yeah. All the masks that the writers were wearing as villains were the books they were writing at that time, which was kind of cute. It's true. You could even call it Twee.
Wait, that's Commandy, right?
Yeah.
Is he actually biting...
Oh, no, that's Anthro.
Anthro.
Anthro's... Commandy's the last boy on Earth. Anthro is the first boy on Earth.
Oh, yes, of course.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Is he actually biting Wonder Woman's shorts?
That is probably another joke.
Ugh.
Even the cover of them running at all the clothes in that one pose is a reference to an old Justice League cover. Though there were people in the clothes at that point.
I guessed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good, except for the unfortunate guilt trip at the end. So, I guess we'll match that one up with the heavy foreshadowing in Batgirl Year One.
Oh, man.
Which I made you read, and which I have to say was a whole lot kinder to you than you were to me.
Though there is a shocking lack of puns in Batgirl Year One.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Like, so it's Marcos Martin. No, it's Javier Pulido who did this one, I think.
Marcos Martin, Alvaro Lopez.
Oh, okay, so it was Marcos Martin. So then Pulido did Robin Year One. All right, so I read this one a long time ago, and I liked it a lot. It was kind of my first introduction to this sort of art, where it's very, like, I hesitate to call it noir-y, because noir has been completely devalued as a term, but it kind of is. It's really? Brighter, but, like, the way the people are drawn, is it would not be out of place in, like, Out of the Past or Rebecca or something like that. It'd make a really good style for an adaptation of, you know, a film noir. But it's much less self-important than Batman Year One is. Kind of by necessity, because Barbara's just Batgirl because she kind of wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she had a fun time and, you know, it's nice to help people.
Well, it's also...
There is self-importance... In the,
it's not like, I must avenge my blah, 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 blah.
Right.
That's no... You were talking about the art, and I was trying to put my finger on it, and as I'm looking through, it is remarkably simple and strong.
Oh, yeah.
There are no fine lines, or very few.
The faces tend to be very clean. Like, even this stubbly guy, he's like six strokes.
And... If you look in the background of all the shots, there's like an establishing one of the room.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no details or no... I would not call it noir.
Really?
Because noir tends to be very, very heavy on shadows.
Yeah.
And like, I suppose Frank Miller noir, he used those simple, more colors and structures to do his... Sin City books, but when I think of noir, I think of like the detailed, the shining of like neon lights off puddles, very, very detailed, gritty look. And most of these panels, once they've established that, okay, she's in a room or she's in this house, are just background color.
Yeah, and really, it's unrealistic color, but it's very mood building.
Yeah.
Like, they're... What is this, the fourth issue? It says chapter 9, but that's definitely not right. She's fighting... Is it Firefly? And Killer Moth?
Firefly and Killer Moth.
I always get, like, the crappy bat villain.
In her original introduction, she was also fighting Killer Moth, so that's a shout-out to that.
And it's all, like, garish oranges and bright pinks, and it's no color you'd ever see in, like, Gotham City ever.
Yeah.
But it works because it's a very hot scene. There's a lot of action and it tends to go.
And it's
like
not a girly pink either.
No.
You know, there's some stuff where, I don't know, especially nowadays, where you expect to see like a martini glass in the background.
Yeah.
This is more about, it's like neon signs and that kind of.
It's almost a garish pink rather than like hot pink. But we were talking about all of the foreshadowing. And there are several scenes where she's like, you know, I'm a big fan of Cassandra, the Oracle.
Yeah.
And there's like a pregnant pause.
And there's a part where she's basically, Batman tests her and she's fighting a Joker robot with a gun.
And he's in the same pose.
And the idea is, there's a thought.
If this is my future, and then she kicks him in the face, I'm not afraid of it.
Yeah.
It's that sort of stuff is a little bit too cute.
Yeah, that's a little bit... I feel like I would be okay with it if I hadn't seen... If that weren't every single Barbara story ever now.
Yeah.
Like, you can't go back to her past without having a reference to it. And I'm sick of that. But this happened before.
Yeah.
So I feel... I don't know. It's a little unfair to judge the book by that. But, and again...
No one knows what's around the corner. Except for an oracle, which is underlined, maybe.
Yeah.
It's... Kind of playing on the fact that, like, it's geared at comics fans, you know? Mm-hmm. So that we'll appreciate the foreshadowing or... It's not even really Well, I guess it's kind of foreshadowing, but it's only... We only know it's foreshadowing because we know it's going to happen. Dramatic irony is what that is. Took me forever to remember the term. And I can appreciate it to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's kind of cool when, like, young Bruce Wayne, you know, is scared of bats as a kid or something, you know? But if you pile it on,
it's the same thing with every like young Bruce Wayne story. At the end, his parents are always like, "Pass me the movie section." Oh, Thomas, thank you for getting me these pearls.
Yeah,
you know.
Boy, I sure do like Zorro. You know?
Yeah. You're like, that is... We get it.
Yeah.
But...
But it's a very good story.
Yes. And it covers a surprising amount of ground. Like, it starts kind of in the middle of the story with her kicking the hell out of Killer Moth.
Yeah.
At a Halloween party in which Bruce Wayne is dressed in the most ridiculous thing I have ever seen.
More ridiculous than the Bat costume?
Yes.
Wow.
Look, he has a flat...
Well, he's a
clown. He has
a,
like a skull
because
cap.
Because you see the Joker.
A yellow skull cap with a pom-pom in the middle of his forehead.
Isn't that the... is it Pagliacci is the clown who dresses like that?
Pagliacci is just the term for clown.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of the joke.
The only one I know is Rigoletto, and that, I don't think he dressed like that.
Oh, no, also, it's definitely Pagliacci.
He was a hunchback. And...
Oh, it's an opera. Okay. But yeah, it's more or less that same costume, which is more kind of cute, like, you know, Batman's worst enemy is a clown, but look, here he's dressed as a clown. Wink, wink, wink. You know?
But it covers, like, an insane amount of ground. And I think it does it really well. It has two love interests for Barbara Gordon, and it has her relationship with her dad, where you can actually see... Like, at first, she's trying to be a superhero, and her first efforts all get shot down.
Yeah.
Completely. Along with trying to join the police force and the FBI, where they're like, you don't even meet our minimum height requirement.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because she's been... I think the modern Barbara Gordon is drawn as extremely tall.
Yeah.
But...
generic comic book tall.
But... And he, like, sees her doing it, and he tries to discourage the superhero stuff, because he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And then she basically sinks into depression, where she's just, like, watching kids, wow. Like... I think it... That would have been like a Barney cartoon.
Yeah.
Which would have been around the time this came out?
No, Barney was early 90s. My little brother watched that.
Okay.
But it's one of those references that, like, people of a certain age will always get. You know?
Yeah. And she's just, like, sitting on the couch being, like, not even moving. And he realizes this is making her unbelievably unhappy. And after a while, he just eases up.
It's before I read this, I didn't know about, I didn't know whether Jim Gordon knew that Batgirl was Barbara Gordon in mm-hmm. the comics, you know? But this, it gives you just enough to believe that he does, but that he's kind of okay with it.
Yeah.
Like the bit at the end when Robin shows up wearing Batgirl's costume.
Yeah.
And he's like, ah, oh, okay, I'm going to buy it this time.
He's a little confused.
Yeah.
But yeah. In Birds of Prey, it's
like
revealed that he knew the whole...
Yeah.
Where he's like, I didn't know about this Oracle thing. And then she's like, oh, there's more, and pulls out the costume. Oh, I knew about that. Come on.
And it's funny how it makes Jim Gordon complicit in everything.
Yeah.
And also for Batman, Year One in Dark Knight made it very clear that from the first time he met Bruce Wayne, he knew that he was Batman. You know, there's a line in Dark Knight about how Jim's like, you know, I don't know who you thought you were fooling with all that ginger ale and champagne glasses. And they both kind of laugh, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of Year One, Batman saves Jim's son, who, I don't know what happened to Jim Jr., come to think about it. But he saves him with no mask on. And Gordon is like, well, you know, I'm not wearing my glasses and you're pretty muddy, so if you leave now.
Yes.
But it's a nice little layer on top of, you know, their relationship.
Yeah.
It's that he sees there's something important there. And mm-hmm. he's, I don't want to say okay with it, but he can accept it.
Yeah. He, basically, his idea is don't push me.
Yeah. Also, don't treat me like an idiot.
Yeah. So.
It's.
But it covers, yeah, her relationship with her dad, with both Robin and Jason.
Bard.
It has a really starts a relationship with Black Canary.
Oh yeah.
They go out and have an adventure with Batman, where she's like, "You are kind of a jerk," and although it was fun, at one point they, you know, she's in the Batcave, they gas her, and then she wakes up in a car across the street from our house with no mask, and she's like, "Batman knows who I am," and then they cut to Alfred and Dick watching her from a van behind the car. And Dick is like, "I can't believe he didn't know who she was." Those cute little freckles, I'd recognize the commissioner's daughter anywhere. And yeah, it's just, it's fun and it's adventurous.
Just enough old school.
Yeah. And it's sad a little bit, yeah. What with the foreshadowing and it is kind of exactly what I want from superhero. Well, there are all kinds of superheroes, but
yeah. this is a good example.
Just someone who's like, I want to do this. I think I can. I want to try my best.
Yeah.
You know, and it's also a hell of a lot of fun for me, and just goes out there and does it, which is at this point much more original and much less
traumatizing.
Yes.
It's, I think,
or much
like art-wise, yeah,
than the someone killed every single person I've ever known in my life. I'm gonna get them.
Tim Drake should be in an insane asylum.
Like, well, he's just waiting for them all to come back. He's got pretty good average so far.
But this, the art, like, I feel like
it's like, you know, my dad's just hiding out in Acapulco.
I feel like it's noir because it reminds me of David Mazzucchelli's Year One on mm-hmm. Batman. Like, lots of really interesting shadow use, even though it's really colorful at the same time. Mm-hmm. And everyone's very thin, which I like a lot. Like, Batgirl is not very busty. Robin has stick legs.
Yes.
Like, Batman's really the only one with shoulders in the entire book. You know? And it's a style that really works for Batgirl and for Robin especially, is that he should be, you know, like a little kid.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit too big for his britches, but still clearly, you know, a young guy.
Yeah. It's adjusting the physicality of each of the heroes.
Yeah.
So not every single one of them is like a burly, muscular guy with, you know, those weird grapefruit arm muscles.
Yeah, with the gigantic
veins.
And
then the kid is like the exact same thing, only a head shorter than the hero.
Yeah. It's, Marcos Martin can really lay out a page too. The bit when Black Canary's like, "Oh, I can't use my bird call." So Batgirl's like, "All right, I'm going to go and run and get him." And Canary yanks her cape to duck her out of the way of the flame.
Oh yeah, that's really good.
Like, just the way it's laid out, it's just perfect. It flows very well from panel to panel. And I think it leads to a scene later where she has, like, burn marks in the shape of the cowl on her
face. Yes. And so she, like, puts face cream all yeah. over her face when she goes in to see her dad. It's just fun.
It's a lot of thought was put into the art, which I really appreciate. Like, Captain Gordon talking to some guy, I forget what his deal is, but the guy has, like, his bow tie untied. He's just kind of like a, you know, a fat guy leaning back in a chair. Everyone looks different.
Oh, and there's another scene where she's joking around with Jason Bard. Mm-hmm. And he's in a hospital bed having just saved
his own leg.
Yeah, because he got shot in the leg. I really would like a comic about him.
Yeah,
and
seriously.
Like how he does day detective stuff for Batman.
I'm telling you, him and Slam Bradley just chilling out, getting in fights.
That would be fantastic. Yeah. But they're kind of like almost unconsciously flirting at that point, mm-hmm. where she's just sitting on the bed and laughing and kind of leaning close to him. And then her dad walks in, and the first panel, she's Barbara and says, "Barbara," and you see just him standing behind them with like a bag in his hand, in his like brown or tan trench coat. And the first shot is him completely in shadow with just the light gleaming off his lenses, so you can't see anything about his expression, keeping Officer Bard company. And then she's just like, shoves out past him. Like, you know, when you're trying to be cool, but you completely give the game away because you're freaking out.
Yeah.
And she's just like, okay, gotta go. Bye. Yeah. And then there are three panels. One with him just looking completely frozen, looking after where she is, like, run out of the hospital. And the third, looking back at Jason with this, like, kind of goofy, hopeful smile.
Yeah.
And holding up the bag and being like, donuts? Where you can see that...
He won as a father.
Well, it's not just that, where he's just like, I am pleased with this development. Just like... Oh, she likes him. He likes her. They're both normal people. Okay.
It's. I feel like Gordon's learned a lot from Batman as far as intimidating people. Because the shadow panel is completely a Batman thing.
Yeah.
Because glasses really don't work like that in real life, but it always looks great.
Yeah.
You know, just to see the, like, the white eyes or something like that, or the glint off the glasses. It's staged very well.
Yeah. You just see him figure it out and decide that he approves.
Yeah.
And go on.
And honestly, this is probably the best thing Chuck Dixon's ever written. Like, I can't think of anything about this that I even really dislike other than the constant Oracle, Cassandra, Suicide Squad, you know.
Yeah.
Stuff going on. There's not actually a Suicide Squad reference, but if he could have fit it in, I bet he would have. Like, I hope I don't ever meet a Wall. I hate Wallers, you know. But it ends like on a very hopeful note. Like, she's fighting Scarecrow, and why does Scarecrow even have a gang? But she's fighting him, and Batman and Robin are coming in behind her, and she's like, you know, this is the life I lead right now, and it's not the end because comic books.
Yeah.
It just
also
works.
Also, because year one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, I would say it's hands down my favorite book in comics.
Wow.
So.
That's high praise. There's, one of the covers for this is actually one of my favorite covers. Let's see if I can find
it. It's exhilarating. Let's go with that. In the way comics are supposed to be.
It's not really sad.
Where it's not like, nothing's too brutal. I mean, there's some... bad violence, but nothing's too brutal, nothing's too gory. It's just action, and it gets you to the next scene.
And there's a really good bit when she gets home, you know, trying to get home ahead of her father, and she's in bed awake. She's like, must be all the bat endorphins pumping. And the next panel is like this really self-satisfied smile. She's going, ha, good one. It's funny in like a really realistic way.
Yeah.
Of course I can't find the like cover
this,
now.
Yeah, this is one of those books where everything just came together.
Yeah.
The art is great, the writing is great, the story's great.
This guy has actually done a really good
the character is perfectly
Spider-Man.
Suited.
Oh, here we go. So it's a cover, she's standing on like a light or something.
Uh-huh.
I've had this as like a desktop forever.
Yeah.
It's just a really great image of Batgirl.
With the cape fluttering behind her.
Yeah. And the way the colors go from, like, bright to dark the higher you go. It's just very well done. But Marcos Martin, he's been doing Spider-Man off and on. Mm-hmm. Right now he's doing a two-page backup with Stan Lee, which is this kind of really goofy Sunday newspaper comic sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's basically an excuse for Marcos Martin to draw a two-page spread every week. You know? And it's just because he's a fantastically talented artist. I mean, there's a shot of Barbara running alongside a building when being dragged by a helicopter. Like, this little sneer on her face in this panel.
Yeah.
Like, it's all perfect.
It is.
But this is one of...
It's really, really great.
Yeah. Very impressive. And I'm glad that I read it. I think it came out in trade around when I was getting, like, heavy into trades.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that point when I was just buying whatever was on the shelves just because.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm glad I actually bought a good book at that point in time. And it also kind of proves that you don't need to, like, I feel like a lot of stuff DC does is meant towards having one complete story, like, everything mm-hmm. needs to fit together, but you can flash back to older stories and still get good tales out of them. Like, even if Barbara's not going to be Batgirl ever again, you can still do, like, a, you know, Babs Gordon miniseries and have it be something interesting.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, Blue Beetle, for example, like, Ted Kord's gone, but there's nothing stopping you from doing, you know, like, a Blue and Gold series, like, 4 issues.
Yeah.
And as long as the story's good, it's worth
maybe.
It.
They did have that, which one was it? Or someone walked into the Blue Beetle laboratory and went, wah-ha-ha-ha-ha.
Oh, yeah. And I don't think they ever followed up on that.
I like it, so I'm keeping it.
Yeah, I think
in my mental continuity.
Geoff Johns was setting it up for a further story, mm-hmm. and then he left the book to do, I think it was Flash Rebirth or something like that. And I assumed that he was going to have some time travel story where Ted comes back.
Well.
So give it, you know, like 3 years till we'll be back.
Woo-hoo.
But yeah, so overall great. Both DC books this time. That's kind of interesting. It's probably the only DC book I own that you haven't read. But, alright, we will see y'all next week.